Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Hi, I'm Stephen Scott.
I'm Sean Preece.
And I'm Tim Schwartz.
Oh, welcome along once again to Tech Talk, the technology show that is, a technology show, quite frankly. And anyone who says otherwise is lying. Hashtag fake news. Right, we've got lots to get through over the next hour. With me, as always, are my trusty friends. Well, for now at least. Sean Preece. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Stephen Scott. I don't think it's total fake news. We have had the odd detour into food and hedges in the past, but yeah, we do get to tech eventually. We get there.
We do, yes. That's the whole point, is we get there in the end. Tim Schwartz is also back with us. Hey, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Sean. Yeah, I think it's a good point. We do get to the tech eventually, but then sometimes it's tech therapy, sometimes it's just totally off the rails, but... We do get there in the end.
Yeah, train wreck is the word that often comes to mind after our show. Can we fade that music away? I'm sorry to Thunderbirds fans, but can we fade the music down for a minute? Because I just want to get right into it this week, because we're going to do things a bit differently. Normally we have the news and we've got the emails and all that, but this week I thought we'd kind of just abandon everything and try something a bit different, because one thing we don't get a chance to talk about a lot is games. And I know when James Kyle was on a couple of weeks ago talking with us, a volunteer, of course, from RNIB, who does a lot of work in the audio games world and trying to promote audio games to the wider public, I thought it'd be interesting for us to maybe expand that view a little bit and talk about the very recent E3 conference, which was held in the States. Now, upon first inspection, I think we all thought, well, what's going to be accessible about this? We have someone on the ground. We have someone who was there, who not only went along to E3, but actually took part in E3 as well, in one of the many sessions that happened, and a very important session, I would say, for us. And that guy is James Rath. James joins us now from Los Angeles. Hi, James. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
We're all good here. And listen, it's lovely to have you back on the show. Last time we had you on, we were sort of fawning over you because you were, you'd met the man, the god himself that is Tim Cook, also CEO of Apple. And, it was really nice to get you on and talk about that meeting, but also tell Anne a bit about your videography as well. So, lots to talk about with you, but this time round, we wanted to focus on E3, which is a massive exhibit of what's effectively coming up in the games world. And you were there, I believe.
Yeah. So kind of like a last minute thing, I got invited because I spoke on a panel there and got to play some new games coming out in the next year or two.
Oh, I am so jealous. I mean, E3 is it, isn't it? When it comes to the games industry, everything is shown there, all the previews and everything. Now, I did have a quick look through the E3 coverage on YouTube and everywhere else. Specifically, I was looking for anything from the VI angle. Was there anything there that you thought was interesting?
Specifically for VI, nothing that I really had came across, but there are definitely some cues and some things that I certainly picked up on with some games I played that definitely make it a little bit more easier to see for those who are visually impaired. And we may have kind of gotten a tease or something that could be coming. And with that, I mean, like, a lot of it, I think, at E3 was about starting the discussion, acknowledging the problem, and kind of spreading the message that we can do better as an industry. And a lot of that came from, thanks to Jeff Keighley. He's big producer in the game industry, works on the Game Awards show and most recently the E3 Coliseum interviews and panels. And he is the one who sort of put together this whole panel for accessibility. And it involved myself, a few other industry insiders from Sony and Microsoft, and another gamer and another journalist who happens to be a gamer as well. and we can go more into detail, sort of like what we talked about too, of course.
Of course, we'd love to, but it does seem like things are starting to move a little bit, doesn't it? You know, mm-hmm. we've with the consoles having, you know, the Xbox having some sort of narrator built in, and I believe the PlayStation does as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't know the exact name of the PS4s. I know it has Zoom, and it has some form of screen reader, but that's about it.
Yeah, of course, that's more because they are more, it's not just game-centric. Well, I suppose, you know, that is the core of a console, but it does other things now, more of a media center, so...
Hang on a minute. What, my PlayStation 4 that I play and I drive my little bus on Grand Theft Auto, that's got a screen reader on it. Since when?
I believe so.
I know you can increase the text size, at least. Unless there's some maybe an extension or something of that you can download... Perhaps.
Maybe. I mean, I may be totally wrong with that, but I did remember hearing a while ago something about the accessibility in there, and maybe it was just a Zoom, but I thought it did have a screen reader. We'll have to double check that.
I'm Googling as you guys talk, okay? So carry on.
Okay, you look that up.
Go right ahead, please.
But it is like tentative steps, and of course there was that big announcement of the Microsoft controller with the additional ports for additional switches and things like that. Not of much interest, I suppose, for us as visually impaired people, but still, it's, you know, a move towards accessibility, which is, yeah, it's a good thing. It feels like we are getting some notice.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it's such a concept, I think, for people who are sighted to understand that people with visual impairments want a game.
Yes.
You know, because I think there's setups nowadays that make it more comfortable for us to at least do so. I mean, we have these large, high resolution monitors. Whether or not you can see all the pixels doesn't necessarily matter. It's like, the thing is, you can get these super large displays for less than $300. Like, I think I bought a 32-inch just HD screen for my desk, and it was like $100.
Yeah.
And it's like 1080p, 60 frames. So, certainly, I mean, the gear is more accessible to afford for having big displays and better resolution TVs, but we also got to make sure that the core devices that we are using work for us, you know?
Yeah. And of course, there is that old thing of getting over, okay, so yes, I'm registered blind, and getting that point across that I can still see some things in certain situations. It doesn't mean that I can't play anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's so hard to describe what you can see and how sometimes you can... there's a game, a classic, that I think it's probably the last game I played, actually, Left 4 Dead. Mm. You know, such a big game. And I could play that game. I had to slow it down. I'd go into the console, slow it down to half or even quarter speed, and I could play it that way. And it was still fun. It was great, in fact. So, you know, it is hard to get across to people, to sighted people especially, that yes, I'm registered blind. Yes, I've got to use a cane for my mobility, but it doesn't mean that, you know, I can't see certain games. I still like to play games. It's a hard thing to get across, I think.
Yeah, we're already battling that unfortunate misconception that we're either blind or sighted, and that there is no gray area, there's nothing in between. And so to the general population, it's sometimes difficult to understand, well, wait, you're blind, you shouldn't be able to see anything, and they don't get that. And then add to it a term like video game, and it's like, well, wait, it's a video game. It requires vision, and you have to be able to see that. And it's like, well, yeah, but some people, you know, that have vision loss can still see that and do that. And what's nice is there is a cultural shift, James, where Microsoft, especially with this adaptive controller and using Zoom and a version of Narrator in the Xbox One and even PlayStation, even if it is only Zoom and not a screen reader, there's an understanding within the consoles themselves that yes, there are people out there who need this technology, even just something as simple as increasing the font size. And there are several games out there that either by design or by accident are playable by somebody that is either VI or totally blind, right, James?
Yeah. Actually, I have a story that happened at E3, and this has to do with people kind of just assuming my ability to play. This has to do, it was the first day of E3 this year, and the game was, I believe, The Walking Dead by Overkill. It wasn't the Telltale game, but the new one coming out that seems to be more of a zombie survival.
Right. Yeah.
And my girlfriend and I, she's visually impaired as well, but she wanted to try this out. She uses a cane, but not everywhere and not all the time. I use a cane more, especially in those sort of expo environments where it gets chaotic. Yeah. I'd otherwise be being bumped into people, probably knocked down. Yeah. If I didn't have this thing to let people know, hey, I probably can't see you. Anyway, we waited in line for about an hour and a half for this game. And it got to the point where like they were just trying to confirm with her, you know, they weren't trying to talk to me. I'm like, I'm trying to step in and be like, no, I'm going to play this. I reconfirmed them like three times. Like, I'm looking forward to playing this myself. I'm going to be playing, you know, alongside as a team with her, separate consoles. And we finally got to sort of the end of the line. And then they finally let us in. And they're like, oh, would you like us to guide you in? And we'll put you next to her. And I'm like, oh yeah, that'd be great. And because it's like you play four people together in a co-op sort of scenario, kind of like Nazi zombies in Call of Duty. And they just put me next to her, but like told me to just stand next to the machine or
you just stand
on, there. On the ground. And I'm like, oh, there's no console? And they're like, you weren't playing, right? And I'm like, I confirmed with you guys three times I was planning to play, but okay. They assume because I have my cane that I'm not going to play at all, that I can't play.
Yeah.
And that it was just kind of frustrating because it was such a waste of like 2 hours of my time. My girlfriend felt terrible. It was such an awkward and uncomfortable situation to have her have to experience that as like the first time going to an expo with me. And it's like, that's the things we have to deal with sometimes. It got better, but I just wanted to share, like, you know, that's the perception that some people have in the gaming industry. Like, you're, you know, despite you trying to stand up and speak for yourself, they're probably not going to listen.
I think it is so important that you bring that up because it's a kind of strange situation that we do put ourselves in to some degree. We put ourselves in it and then other people place us in it. We've got a situation, like you say, where someone's making an assumption about what you can see and therefore what you're capable of, whilst at the same time, we're battling to work out what we're capable of, what we can see. So it's a strange kind of thing going on. I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that developers have that perception still and don't feel that blind or visually impaired people can play their games. That being said, like I alluded to before, there are some game developers out there, mainstream developers, that do understand that, and whether it's on purpose or on accident. I know there are some games on Nintendo Switch that are mostly audio or at least playable with with what's available on the Nintendo Switch. We know that games like Madden are implementing things for the blind and visually impaired to play better using different sounds and haptic feedback. So some developers get it, some still, for the most part, don't, like you were talking about, James. But I think it's important that from the top down, from Microsoft, from Sony, even Nintendo to a certain degree, they're giving the tools to us in the consoles, and hopefully that'll trickle down to the developers. Maybe there's something that they can do. Do you think that that's where it has to change for the culture? I mean, I'm sure we need to speak out for ourselves, but I'm sure it's also helpful that the companies themselves are putting those things in there, so maybe developers will understand that they can make games accessible.
Yeah. So it's funny that you brought up Nintendo. Nintendo has been a case that's been inconsistent. It's such a odd case because, you know, they had 1-2 Switch come out, and I don't think they ever thought in their own office, like, oh, two blind people could play this. And honestly, it was the first thing I thought of when a game that only used audio cues and rumble, like, I'm like, that's perfect. You know, have my friend Tommy.
It was made for us, right?
Exactly. So it's such a fun party game to play with other people who are visually impaired or blind, and just anyone. And then there's games like Splatoon, which I play heavily, which is two very vibrant colors. It's just sort of, you know, Nintendo has a sort of cartoony art style with a lot of their games. Whether it's like kind of more of an anime or more of a Western cartoonish. They always have these art styles, not always, but for the most part, that are easy to see, you know, and they're usually vibrant. So like with Mario games, Mario Odyssey, for example, they had an assist mode, which Mario games are a little hard for me in terms of the camera and depth perception, because I don't know if I'm going to make that jump or not, and that can always be a little hard to predict, but there's a thing called assist mode, which has this sort of blue arrow just help guide you. Now, I can run off the path, I can go explore and find some, like, power-ups or coins, but it's just nice knowing that there is a path that I can follow all the way to the end of the map. I mean, there's multiple reasons why Nintendo probably included that. I don't know if they thought about visually impaired people following this very easy to see line, but it definitely helps. You know, I'm sure they're thinking more so about, oh, you can now play with your kids, you know?
Yeah.
And your kids, it's your first time gaming maybe, but I don't know. I like to think that it works out for me. Splatoon is one of those rare cases where it's like a shooter that's accessible. What? And it's so much fun too. It really reminds me of like a Mario Sunshine meets like just
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty. Yeah, in a sense. Even Splatoon has its own version of zombies, cooperative, which, you know, I get the hype now. You know, it's fun. It's you fight these hordes of enemies coming your way. So anyway, Nintendo's, it's interesting. I wish they'd be a little bit more consistent and realize like, okay, people are using these features for these reasons. Let's be sure to include these in all upcoming versions or spin-offs as well. Because that's the thing, Nintendo, like, you have one Mario game that comes out and it could be done by a completely different team than the last team, you know? I just wish Nintendo would sort of have these, like, accessibility guidelines sort of just involved with all their teams. And then as, like, for EA, which you mentioned, I mean, I know EA gets a lot of flack in the industry, for the amount of microtransactions they like to put in and just, I don't know, I feel like gamers get a little exhausted, but I give EA credit for, they have people who give a damn. Like, they care. They really are passionate about making their games accessible. And I highly appreciate that. I don't play Madden personally, but my brother does. He's VI as well. But he has enough vision to like play Madden, but it's nice knowing that he can turn on the accessibility features to make it easier to see, to have larger text. I mean, that's a big thing, I think, with like a lot of the Nintendo games that are like platform-ish, I guess, like, for example, Mario or Kirby, you know, they like to have these fun, big, bubbly text fonts. But then if you go and play a game like Xenoblade, which is like an RPG, I'm squinting my eyes trying to read the first two words on a 50-inch display. Like, it's, I can't see it. And I'm like, I wish they just let me increase the font size in this. I get there's like different languages and stuff, and maybe, but no, I mean, I don't think that's an excuse. It's such a hard ball with Nintendo. They're very inconsistent, and I want them to sort of get it.
I think Nintendo, sometimes it can be, it's almost accessibility by accident, isn't it? You know, it's not designed for accessibility, but just by some fluke, it's perfect for us, or it becomes accessible for us. Whereas I think you're right, EA do get so much flack, and sometimes rightly so. But the very fact that they've, I think, aren't they the first company that's gone serious on accessibility to a specific game like that? I can't think of any others.
I know Microsoft from the OS side has been doing great strengths, and even the hardware side now, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But Sony, like, themselves, they've been just doing their first-party studios been doing a fantastic job at just accessibility QA testing, just making sure that things are in there from the start. Like, they're designing their games now with accessibility in mind. Thief mode, for example, in Uncharted, fantastic example. It's a mode that lets you get rid of all the textures and completely make it so anything that's like an ally or an item that like you can pick up or like that's all blue. And then anything that you need to attack or shoot, something that's an enemy is red. And it's just, you're in this sort of grayscale world. So there's no textures kind of getting in the way.
Fantastic.
And it's incredible. I mean, like, those textures don't matter to me. Maybe there are VI people who like, you know, it looks nice from what I can see. And that's great. Like, if you want to have that sort of cinematic experience, go for it. But I'm there to play the game. You know, if I want to watch a movie, I'll watch a movie. I want to see more of that in games coming up like God of War, The Last of Us, anything coming out of Sony. And it really makes, like, my brother has a PS4 here. It's not mine, but I'm very intrigued now to, like, take it out and start playing it myself.
So while we're waiting for Nintendo to kind of catch up and realize it, even once it's brought to their attention, it's almost like, oh, we did that? It was successful? Oh, well, good for you. And then they just kind of move on. So while we're waiting for them, you did mention earlier that Microsoft and Sony were part of an accessibility panel at A3. Is there anything you can tell us about what they discussed and maybe what kind of their plans are or what they're talking about in that type of a panel?
Yeah. So yours truly was actually a part of this panel, which is great. Getting different perspectives from like gamers and developers. So there was a guy named Bryce from Microsoft. He used to be head of like accessibility at Xbox, and now he's like on the whole overseeing the Microsoft team for inclusion, which is pretty great. And his like project that he worked on was the Xbox Adaptive Controller. And that is like literally a game changer, is what people are saying, and it is for many people. It's a controller that's sort of just, you have your A and B button, very huge, very large, so that like it's very easy to tap, and then you have a D-pad and like a couple standard menu buttons. But if you want to get your right analog, you want to get your left analog stick, your trigger buttons, you start plugging in other controllers and other switches, basically. And this is ideal for people who have limited mobility. But it's not limited to that. It can be used for people who are visually impaired as well that might require a different kind of setup, you know? I mean, I'm even thinking like, what if you could, and this isn't confirmed that this is an ability to do this. But like, what if you could plug in a Braille display and there's like an API in a game that could then have all the text coming down to you, that's happening in maybe this, you know, point and click adventure, and it's being read, either it can be read aloud with narrator, or you can have it, just coming down as Braille, for the storyline or dialogue. I mean, there's so much potential for this. And even Microsoft has said that they're open to, letting this work on other consoles, like not just PlayStation or, you know,
wow,
Nintendo, like for everything. And, you know, hopefully that means like, I know it's going to work for PC and Xbox at launch, but like if Nintendo kind of gives it the green light, and hopefully, I mean, Nintendo's been showing that they're open to cross platform, at least with like multiplayer with like Minecraft and Fortnite and all these other games on the Switch that work with Xbox One players. And Sony's been very close down, like, no, we're not part of that. Hopefully that means that, like, you know, the adaptive controller can work on a Switch in the next, like, couple years here. Even Mac, you know, for those who may play a couple games on Mac, you know, because I know, personally for me, I find my Mac to be more accessible than I just bought a PC, actually, for the first time in a decade. I've tried tinkering with Windows on a Mac for specific pieces of software, but I don't game on PC. I've always found it more comfortable to game on a console. But who knows? I mean, I'm curious to try this adaptive controller myself, and if there's maybe a new kind of setup that, you know, can make it a little bit easier. I don't know.
And because of the amount of ports on it, and because it is so new and just hitting the market, I think you're right in saying that, no, there isn't maybe a Braille display input yet. But it's not something that's out of the realm of possibility, right? Because there are so many ports on the adaptive controller. What's to say that some company out there doesn't say, you know what, we're going to use that port input, that style of port or whatever with the different ports that are available, and make a Braille display, or make a voice input device where you can control characters or something, whatever it might be, that might help the VI community even more.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely like right. It's got a lot of potential, and I was talking to Bryce at E3 after the panel, and he was telling me that like the idea behind this controller wasn't to be assistive. It wasn't supposed to be a piece of assistive tech. It's an adaptive tech for anyone. It's not there to have a feature to help you. It's there to have you bring your features that are made for you, that you can bring with your other pieces of hardware, or, you know, collectively put together and build yourself.
It's a really interesting distinction that someone at a big mainstream company like that gets, that we're going to adapt it to you, not assist you. And that may not seem like a big difference, but putting it in that way, that actually makes sense. That's really interesting. What are the things that they talk about then at that panel? Was there other announcements that they made or other things that they wanted to really push?
Yeah, so a lot of it was sort of just getting the message out there to a little bit of the mainstream. There was definitely like, I want to say a couple hundred people in the audience, plus like thousands of people listening online. I think like 18,000 just watching on YouTube. And I think it really got the message across like, hey, we exist. You know, whether we're using a wheelchair and we're trying to play Kinect sports, or we're blind and we want to play a shooter, you know, it's, we exist and we want to be a part of gaming. You know, we're such a huge population, people with disabilities overall, let alone like individual groups of people with their own situation going on, that why not think about us? Why not think about us from the design process? Because accessibility can really benefit anyone, you know, because gaming is such an aging, it's such an aging medium, hobby, if you will. There are people from the 80s who were kids who grew up on the NES and Super NES who are now like in their 30s and 40s gaming on the Switch or the Xbox One and PS4. And as you get older, you're going to probably lose some sight. You might lose some hearing. Why not have these developers like be a part of this move to make their games include closed captions, to have adjustable text sizes, different contrast settings, colorblind settings, a number of things like being able to change the texture pack to be something that's a little easier to see. It just makes sense. And if I don't think you're a part of this sort of revolution or this idea, this mindset that gaming is for everyone, then I don't think you're doing it right. And I think Microsoft really hit that really hard with the adaptive controller. Like, we know there are some things out there that just developers, software-wise, are not doing, you know, things to help. So let us just make a piece of hardware that will hopefully let backwards compatible games just become accessible all of a sudden. And then Microsoft, Sony over with their software studios and making sure, like Sam Thompson with Naughty Dog, he said like right from the design process, we want to include accessibility. And his idea was they're not going to try and solve every problem, but they're going to experiment with different settings. And if something works and they nailed it, great, they're going to include it and be consistent among releases, something that like a lot of developers and publishers aren't, you know. So the mindset that we wanted people to walk away with from this panel was, this is happening, these people exist, and you're welcome to join anytime in your lifetime, but we want to make sure that everything is accessible to everyone in the gaming industry at some point as we're moving forward.
Yeah, there's a big potential market there, isn't there? Because you have somebody like myself where I had vision, was playing games like crazy on console or on PC. And then as my vision slowly went away, I found it more difficult to play certain games, certain types of games, whether it was text or whatever. And nowadays, with the text font sizes being able to be made larger, that would be helpful. But then when I went to the point of having no vision at all, no usable vision, I had to step away from video games for a long time. And now here we are in this renaissance, in a way, of not just audio games that we have for us as blind people, but like you were saying, you know, mainstream game companies getting it. I, for a long time, was a big MMO fan on the PC. And so I played, you know, Dark Age of Camelot and City of Heroes and Star Wars Galaxies and all those kind of things. But especially Dark Age of Camelot, I played it for, gosh, for 8 years or 10 years, and then had to stop because the text was too small. Well, then it was, I can't see the environment anymore. When I can't even see my character anymore. And it was just, you know, not working. And so now in this new era of, hey, we get it and we want to make these accessible, because those people that have lost vision or don't have vision or have issues, they could be buying games. They could be playing games. And why not tap into that, you know, that part of the population and, you know, get them playing, and obviously would then just make more money.
Well, I think you should stop playing just because 8 years is so long to play a game for, Tim. That's crazy.
Oh, not for a multiplayer online game like that. No, it's not.
And can I just drop in to say, guys, that the PlayStation 4 does have text-to-speech in it.
Yeah, I thought it did.
Now, it does stay here that the feature is only available on PS4 systems sold in certain countries or regions, which might be why I've not seen it.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know if it's available everywhere, but it's certainly there. It also has got Zoom, invert colors, larger text, bold text, high contrast, and closed captions as well, plus button assignments, auto scroll speed, and so you can add all those accessibility settings to a quick menu on the home screen. So yes, it does have those functions.
But I think it's important to say that those functions aren't necessarily available in a game. They are very much on the operating system, if you like, the home screen of the console.
James, do you know if there's anywhere or anyone tracking that information? I know there's audiogames.net for blind and visually impaired games, and they sometimes talk about mainstream games that might be made accessible, but is there any other website or place where we can go and find out, okay, the built-in screen reader for Xbox One or PlayStation 4 works on this game, or this has been made to be accessible? Do you know of any reference website or anything like that?
So I know there's a lot of like independent bloggers and reviewers who do provide kind of like evaluations. For example, like I know there's like ablegamers.org that provides to include gamers with disabilities into the conversation, and they also provide accessible experiences for maybe children in hospitals or veterans. Another website I found was daggersystem.com. Dagger System does accessibility consulting for game developers who have an interest, but they also review and kind of give like awards on a scale of like who's more accessible, who's got these features locked down, what audience is this accessible for, whether vision or limited mobility or maybe for the deaf. So along with those two websites, I do recommend also just trying to find an accessibility splash page or like landing page on the individual publishers' websites. I know EA has it covered pretty well. Sony has a good kind of like accessible webpage, kind of just going over all the features that they offer. Microsoft has a beautiful landing page for that. And then Nintendo has a page of a sense. Like, hold on, let me read this. It's a corporate page on their website, nothing that specifies any accessibility features. And it just says, Nintendo endeavors to provide products and services that can be enjoyed by people of all ages and abilities. If you have questions about accessibility features of Nintendo's products or services, please contact us using one of the methods below. And you can, you know, call in and, oh, is this accessible for me? We don't know. Kind of, you know, so I really think Nintendo could do a little bit of a cleanup, and you shouldn't have to call someone to ask if this is accessible. You should just kind of have it on their website, like, oh yeah, we offer invert colors on the Switch, we offer grayscale, and, you know, that's about it. But
as far as hardware features are concerned, yeah, they really should be having that available out there on the website, say this is what we have available. Now how that translates to a game or not, well, contact the game developer, but here's at least what we have. Sounds like between the two websites that you named there, they're almost like the Apple Vista of console gaming.
Exactly. I know there's audiogames.net.
Yeah, audiogames.net is another really good one as far as finding out what games are available, like you said, but those are mostly going to be audio only and maybe not talking too much about adaptive or accessible visual games. But I think between those different websites and blogs, you may get a similar, like I said, an Apple Vista kind of experience, because that's what we need. We need something like that where we can go in and find out, is this available or accessible? Is this going to be something I can play, you know, with little vision or no vision? So yeah, those are great resources.
So something I find interesting, if there's a demand for people to play a game, they'll try to find a way to do it, or at least connect with others trying to do it. I mean, that's where audiogames.net, like, there are some forum pages that, like, people were talking about Madden, and they wanted to play Madden, then EA somehow caught wind of, like, what's happening in this corner of the internet? Oh, there's a lot of people trying to play this. Okay, let's step our game up, you know, and their head of accessibility really like took note. And I mean, I don't even know if she was head of accessibility at the time, but now she is. So could have probably put her into a whole new role, proposing all this. So if you are loud enough, like if you can get enough people, I think you can really make a difference. you never know what the next post on Reddit about a game could do. I mean, I know a guy named Ross Miner who plays Pokemon. He grew up on it, and he went blind around 8 years old. And so from that, he just had to play Pokemon, the newer games with the different cries that each one has and like the sound cues in the game. And the sound cues worked really well for a while. But I did recently play Pokemon Let's Go for the Switch at E3. And I have concerns now because they're trying to implement and force motion controls, and there's no confirmation word yet on, like, I think they've gotten enough feedback that, like, hey, what about gamers with disabilities? You know, I like Pokemon, but I can't throw a Joy-Con. You know, I can't, like, I can't physically do that. Or, like, someone who's blind, it's like, how do I know when I'm throwing or when I'm ready to throw? There's not enough, like, cues or, you know, I don't even know if I'm throwing in the right direction kind of thing. So I think they've gotten enough feedback to be like, they stopped confirming that this is the only way, which they were for a little while. And maybe they're going back to the drawing board before this game comes out, and hopefully they listen. I even gave personal feedback right to their head of PR to share those notes. Hopefully it gets the Game Freak in Japan. But I know Pokemon is a huge game because it's like an RPG that's like already kind of accessible for many audiences, but the different sound cues that was in the game design really helped a lot of blind people play. And there was like all sorts of, there's a whole subreddit for blind Pokemon gamers where they ask sighted people for some walkthroughs or maybe help in certain areas, or they just kind of work together to like get past a certain part of the game. So it's pretty neat.
Okay, I've let you boys have your geek out for quite long enough now. I need to bring this back to some kind of reality to me, and to stand up to those people. Now, calm down. To stand up for those people who, you know, aren't playing games. And like me, maybe look at a game like all the games you've mentioned, James, and I tend to think to myself, they just seem very complicated and visually challenging. To me, I'm over that line of being able to do that. And it just seems to me anyway, as someone who grew up with a vague interest in games and didn't have a huge amount, you know, a lot of friends that did, you know, some of the earlier games were brilliant because they were so simple, but now they're so complicated, so visually challenging. And I just think, maybe not. So I want to turn our sort of conversation a little bit away from the consoles, because I know that is, and it's fair to talk about that for the majority of this conversation, because that is where people are getting their games from. That's where everyone's playing their games. But there is a new category that seems to be developing, and we're a long way off it being anywhere close to a PlayStation or Xbox experience. But I am intrigued by it because it's audio only, and that is the Echo smart speaker, the Google Home smart speaker. You know, the idea of that being a console is ridiculous, I guess. But I think that with games developing, and today I just had an email drop in my inbox today from a company that's creating audio drama called Earplay. They've developed a game with Universal to come up with this game. It's only available in the States at the minute for Echo users, but it is a game that you can play around Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, the Fallen Kingdom, the new film. So it's actually meant to be played in conjunction, you know, so you go to the film, you see the film, you enjoy it, you come home, you can play the audio game, and it has all the original sounds from the movie as well in there, as well as being written as a partner to this. Now, as I say, I'm not saying with any, you know, with even a smirk on my face, it's the next console, because it's not. But it is an interesting category, and of course, it's mainstream, but it's audio. What do you think?
Yeah, I recently heard about how Echo is being implemented even for mainstream games. A friend of mine who I actually collaborate with in the film industry, he recently directed a slew of commercials for Call of Duty and Amazon Echo. And Amazon Echo is able to like provide you with all your stats and stuff of how you did. And I even thought like it could be interesting, like what if you are playing like a mainstream game and using the Echo to work with your game to become more accessible. But that's a whole other discussion for another day, and there's so much potential in that, I think, sort of like as an AI guide. But Echo itself, like being a game player, could very much be interesting. And I mean, we've seen audio games on iOS and Android for a few years now. Not many, but enough to sort of be like, okay, people are experimenting and creating some very unique and interesting experiences for all audiences who are hearing. With Amazon Echo, I think there's such a potential there too, because even for like a deaf audience, like to be included, they have things like Echo Show, things with a display that could have the potential of like closed captioning everything that Echo's saying. And whether or not you're verbal back, you know, maybe the Echo has a USB port or something, the plug-in or a wireless keyboard. I don't know. But I think there is a lot of potential there. And what if you could hook up a keyboard to Echo and maybe there's keyboard controls or even like a mouse and it's all just audio, you know, instead of using a screen on a computer, it's something that's cheap, you know, spending what an Echo is like oftentimes $30 on sale, $49, on the regular, and that's USD, I guess. But I think there's a lot of potential there, and maybe it's something that Amazon might want to have interest in, at least like trying to propel. I mean, I know there's some stuff already, applications coming out, but nothing I've been able to try myself. So I can't really say how that experience works. But I'm very much interested. If you guys have any like titles that are already maybe out, maybe I can pick up an Echo and try it. Otherwise, like if we're just sort of like theorizing how this could work, I think there's so much potential there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about two things. I think it's about the type of game. I think it's fair to say that certain games will never translate.
Absolutely.
my favorite game, Grand Theft Auto, which will just never work on that, I guess. But
I mean, you never know.
No, you don't know, but I think it's interesting because it's also about, the second thing is inputs. You know, obviously we're all used to using consoles in that traditional sense of having a controller of some kind. You don't have that currently with the Echo unless you're talking about things like the buttons that they've brought now. Now, these are obviously buttons for games that are multiple choice questions, you know, so those kind of family games, you sit around and you bash the buzzer and say, hey, I know the answer to this, and you know, you can play along. So with that development of the inputs to this device, which to me seems like the easiest way they can do this, I think that the way of sort of navigation, and then of course we think about sound and how we're moving towards that sort of 360 degree sound that you can now get from a lot of technology that yet to be implemented, I guess, into the Echo, but that could come. So, you know, yes, we are theorizing a bit, but the potential's all there.
Well, there's already a good start on the Echo because there are so many audio games out there, quite honestly. I mean, I can think of, you know, 10 or 12 right off the bat that are pretty good. I mean, they're choose-your-own-adventure kinds of games. So like you were talking about, Stephen, it asks you a question and you have to answer it or you have to make a choice between a couple of things. You know, so you have to carefully go through it. But there are things like The Magic Door. There's a Sherlock Holmes game. There's a lot of dungeon crawlers. So you're having to pick, you know, north, south, east, or west on how you want to proceed. Do you want to fight this monster? Do you want to run away from this monster? You know, do you want to take this path? Do you want to pick up this item? You know, it'll ask you those kinds of things. You know, Grand Theft Auto, in a way, it would be a totally different game, but it could be the same feel because it could be, you know, do you want to steal this car? Do you want to run over this prostitute or shooter? You know, you know, what do you want to do? You know, and have the sound effects and the feel of it. And I could see somebody porting something like that to it. But again, it would be a choose your own adventure kind of GTA, not the real experience, but it'd still be pretty, I could see it being pretty close. The television show Gotham, they came out with a companion game like we were talking about with Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, where it was the Wayne investigation and you were part of solving the murder mystery of Bruce Wayne's, you know, parents being murdered. And it was a companion for the TV show. And it's a fantastic experience with sound effects, with actors that are good actors, not just cheesy, you know, C-list kind of actors. You have a good story with good music and good sounds and acting. And the Amazon Echo is a great place for that experience. And I found it to be really, you know, really fun so far and really entertaining. So if they can expand that, make those more immersive, make those more popular, even have other input devices like James was talking about going into the future, I wouldn't ever still call Amazon Echo a console per se, but boy, it could definitely still be a big player in a gaming space, especially for the blind and visually impaired.
I thought it was interesting that you brought up Grand Theft Auto, because I just imagine, like, what if you could hear the police scanners going off, and then, and you could, like, just all the different audio that you could incorporate to make the world feel lively without, like, ever having to visually see it, and you making those decisions kind of like a choose your own adventure game for Call of Duty. Like, it's kind of wild. I mean, like, the idea of, like, an open world sandbox, like, a choose your own adventure game, I think has a lot of potential. And it's funny that you mentioned, I didn't even know that there was, like, these little controllers that you could, you know, for multiple choice input. I mean, there you go right there with, like, ways to input into this potential console or device. So yeah, no, I think, thinking more about it now, like, it's definitely a contender. It's I think there's something there, and especially the idea that it can work alongside games, like maybe your Xbox One, Switch, or PS4, as a way to help guide you, or make the experience more immersive verbally. But, you know, you never know.
I think that's the point. You never know. It's very immature, this whole new voice platform.
Oh, sorry, I thought we were talking about us for a second.
Well, we're very, very immature about this. You know, look, yes, you're very right. It's the platform is ideal for a certain genre of games, and choose your own adventure games, it's all very good, but, you know, the replay value on that is very limited. But I have seen a few games recently. I mean, like The Magic Door you mentioned, Tim, you know, a text adventure style of game is fantastic and perfectly suited for this, as well as there's games recently I've played, Escape the Room, Escape the Plane.
I love those.
Yeah, they're good, and they're good games to play. They are just good games. Now, are you ever going to see a shooter that's voice controlled and audio only? I can't imagine it. But then again, I could never imagine a touchscreen until Apple came out and said, this is how you do it. So just because we don't know how you would implement that at the moment doesn't mean it's impossible. And it's, you know, it's a growing platform, so it's definitely one to watch.
I think it's really good to bring this up from the point of view of people who are listening to this, who are thinking, okay, they've been talking about games all day, that's wonderful, but, you know, what's really in this for me? How could I benefit from this if I'm not a gamer? If I'm not, you know, going out to spend an absolute fortune on a console and then a game and then a this and a that, you know, because I'm one of those, I would say, games light people. I just kind of like a brief look at them and then I get bored very quickly. But I do like these sort of choose your own adventure games. These really appeal to me because they're simple. I'm not a smart person. I've said this before.
We agree.
We haven't argued yet.
Yeah, no one's arguing. I noticed that. But, you know, I'm not a smart person. I don't like to pretend I'm a smart person, because I very quickly get found out. And not only that, I like games to be simple, because I don't know if it's just a thing where I am with my journey at the moment, but I'm thinking, you know, I need something to be simple for me, because then I don't have to put too much thought into it. Whereas, you know, playing these games,
you say that, Stephen. Now, whenever I ring you and you're on your, you know, downtime, all I can hear in the background is that bus and the beeping where you're driving your bus around in Grand Theft Auto 5. Now, you see, of course, that's not the aim of the game. That's not the ethos of the game. It's not a bus driving simulation. But you found something you like to do, and you can do it. It's accessible. And it's enjoyable, I'm assuming, because you do it for hours. So
I won't go as far as accessible. It's enjoyable, because I can't really tell if the lights are at red or green.
I don't think it matters.
It doesn't really matter, yeah.
No, can't really see the pedestrians. So, you know, there have been a few knocks, which annoys me, because then the police chase me and then I get killed, and then it means I can't find any more buses. And that irritates me. These are real world first world problems, I guess. But anyway, back to the point. Consoles, per se, like we've talked about, are of course where we want the accessibility to be, but I think it is also good that we've got the capability, for those who, you know, and I want this conversation for everybody. As you all know, I like to make sure everyone's included in this. So, you know, even if you're not a gamer, but you kind of like a game, or even just with friends or family, you know, the fact that you've got maybe in your house right now something like an Amazon Echo or a Google Home that's got this capability, you know, it, and it's so simple. That's and not just simple to use, but simple to get into. You don't have to learn, you know, here's a 300-page manual, I'll see you in a year, and then we'll talk about it. You know, it's actually just, you know, play a game, you know?
Well, I think to the broader point, Stephen, that this is all about general accessibility awareness. The fact that these mainstream companies are picking up on a slice of the population in the world and saying, you know what, these are people that we can actually make games for and sell them to. I mean, audio games aren't a brand new concept. I mean, Shades of Doom and Grizzly Gulch, Chillingham, these kind of games for PC were around, what, 15, 20 years ago? I think more than 20 years ago for some of those. And they were very good audio games, especially even for the time. They still, some of them stand up as good audio games now. And then, of course, with iOS for a number of years, we've had a lot of really good audio games on iOS as a platform. And these are games made by, usually, and for the blind or visually impaired. And now the mainstream is saying, hey, this is a genre. This is actually something we can do, whether it's an all audio game where it's a video game, but we add audio cues or their haptic feedback or something with colors or textures or whatever it is. I think it's a gamer discussion, but it goes to the wider conversation of accessibility awareness, because once people see in an article, Microsoft or Sony is doing this, well, then that could maybe have effects on other parts of the mainstream when it comes to accessibility. So I think it is a cause and effect, and I think it's a really good thing.
It's good you bring that up, and you're right too, and I think that this is exactly where we want it to go. But what I love about the Amazon thing and the Google thing is that, you know, these are mainstream products. These skills, these games, they are all mainstream, and, you know, it's so cheap as well. But I think coming back to E3, and your experience, James, which sounds incredible and a great experience, I'm sure. You know, the fact that there was an accessibility panel, and I know we shouldn't be shocked by this, but maybe we should be a little bit...
pleasantly surprised?
Yeah, we should be pleasantly surprised. Absolutely. That in 2018 yeah. There was an accessibility panel. And you know what? You were on it, which is fantastic. I guess you are therefore, and I'm assuming here, wrongly perhaps, but I'll ask the question, why not? Are you hopeful for the future of accessible gaming with these manufacturers?
I think so. I think many have work to do. Many have work to start, but I think 5 years from now, we'll look back at like whether we're still gaming on a PS4 Pro and Switch, or there's new consoles out, or maybe the console market has changed drastically and we have mini consoles and PCs. Whatever it looks like, I think they'll be finding ways to make it for everyone. I'm hopeful that it'd be the norm to, you know, it's great that Sony and Microsoft are doing this, because they're setting an example for all their publishers that are on their platform. You know, it's great to see them and not just some indie developer adding a feature or two. Because who's going to know about that? I mean,
yeah.
Unless it's Minecraft and then, you know, then it gets bought for billions. No, but it's great. I'm hopeful. Yes. I think it will take a little time. And I don't think it'll be really a standard, or at least like seen at least by some as like a standard, until maybe another 3 to 4 years, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, look, it's early days, but I agree. I think it sounds really promising. As you said, James, and you, Tim, it's all about getting our voices heard. And it does sound like they've started to listen finally. Yes, we're visually impaired, we're blind, whatever, but we still want to play these games. And there are ways that we can play these games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now we expect to see accessibility settings in mainstream devices such as smartphones or tablets. We just expect it to be there. And hopefully that will eventually become the case with mainstream games as well. You just will expect or know there will be a accessibility option or accessibility setting section in the games menu.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very hopeful. It sounds like we've started to make some progress on it at long last.
Absolutely.
So James, you're a YouTuber as well as, I know this is obviously, you know, gaming's one part of your life. You do the YouTube thing, I believe. So tell us where we can find you on the YouTube.
Yeah, and most recently twitch.tv/JamesRath. That's RATH, not drop W. I'm not that angry. But
not yet.
Not yet. James Rath. YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch now. I've been gaming, been playing some Splatoon and Fortnite on a live stream. You can also check out the panel. It's on the Game Slice YouTube channel. You can probably just type in E3 accessibility in games, and it should come up somewhere in the top search. But really great panel. It's about 26 minutes. I recommend it because it might change like a little bit of what you know. There's even a little bit of a tease from Sam with Naughty Dog and Sony of like The Last of Us 2 having some sort of accessibility features that are unannounced yet, and maybe that'll include our audience as well. So hopefully we'll see.
Very nice.
Or we won't see, you know, either or. It's all up in the air.
Well, checking that video out. Thank you for that, James. And great, you know, lovely spending the hour with you.
Yeah, no, it's been great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
Do you know what? He was a really nice guy.
Not just nice, he's cool. I actually feel cooler after speaking to him. He's so California.
As you should, Sean. You should definitely feel cooler after talking to him. But no, that was really fantastic. A lot of good stuff in there. And he's definitely got his pulse on what's going on with accessible games. Wait.
We know what you mean.
I really want to hear people's views on this because I think this was interesting this hour. And, you know, if you think wrong, if you think otherwise, do tell me. But, you know, I'm sure you will. But you can email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We'll do more of these kind of shows as we go along, just focusing in a little bit on a specific topic from time to time. That's been our look at E3, our Tech Talk Takeover. We should call it that from now on. Hey, that's a good name for it.
We need a jingle.
We will need a jingle, yeah. But I think the money's run out, quite frankly, on that one. But yeah, listen, we'll catch you again next time. Do keep up with everything that's going on with tech on our podcast, RNIB Tech Talk. You'll find it wherever you find your podcasts. And we will catch you again soon here on Tech Talk. As always, to James Rath, our guest, thank you to him for joining us. And also to Tim and Sean. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.